He is certainly within his rights to disagree, but when it comes to publicly denouncing people in that fashion regarding personnel matters, I think he's way out of bounds, and I did support his removal, and I would support it if it came up again, because he has really, really caused our local station board to have a great deal of difficulty moving forward with matters at hand. We need to be discussing the issues of radio and how to promote it and how to keep it going, as opposed to what one or two specific board members are unhappy about. So that's really all I've got to say on the matter.
Deb Shafter, are you here yet?
Yeah, I want to say a couple of things about it. One, Ken has persisted in calling this an illegal operation because he says he didn't receive the paper, but he produced it at the meeting. There was a meeting. It was called for. It was noticed. He was there with an attorney. The fact that he says it's illegal, he's hanging his hat on the fact that we were originally moving to suspend him, and we opted for a lesser punishment when we couldn't get a two-thirds majority. We got an over a majority to suspend him permanently, but we got because we all felt his actions were so egregious. But we did get a two-thirds majority to suspend him for 60 days, and that's what we did. And it should not be overturned. It shouldn't be referred any further for overturning. The whole case is that Ken has a lot of time to kick this stuff around, and I haven't heard one legitimate point that he's made yet.
Okay. Was there a motion, Ted?
Yes, the motion actually was brought before this committee by a member of the National Board from Houston, Wendy Schrill, and that was that this whole suspension be rescinded and that any significant actions that took place during that time period, i.e. the approval of the budget and of the election of people to the Pacifica National Board and a few other items that I would not be able to enumerate right now, but those things that Mr. Freeland contends were significant during that time period be brought back before the local station board for reconsideration. Some of the things that Sandra said occurred or that she alleges occurred after the suspension, and that would make them irrelevant to this. Neither Sandra nor Deb have said just now, nor was it said in the hearing to suspend him, what the specific grounds for his suspension were. That is the reason that he contends, and I contend, that both his suspension and the original suggestion that he be expelled were illegal. This body should hear from both Deb and Sandra, who supported his suspension, as to what he did prior to his suspension that would be justification for it.
Ted, before you go on, I'm trying to figure out if there's a motion before us and what it is.
I move that the National Governance Committee rescind the suspension of Ken Freeland and any significant actions taken by the local station board during his suspension.
Okay, I just, as a point of order, the Governance Committee doesn't have the authority to do that. The Governance Committee can recommend that the PNB vote that way. But we don't have the power to do that. Paul, can you read the motion?
Well, first I have a point of information. From what I'm hearing, was this issue sent to us by the PNB?
Yes.
Did they pass a motion, or did they just say issue goes to there? Was there a motion included with their charge to us?
Bob, have we been sent the minutes of that meeting, and or do you recall how we disposed of this in Houston?
To my knowledge, I don't recall seeing minutes of that meeting yet.
Yeah, I don't either. And I don't remember whether we referred it to governance. I mean, the reason I put it on the agenda is my memory was that we referred it to governance, but I can't guarantee that.
Dave, can I just...
Please.
I do remember a specific vote to refer it to governance, but I can't remember what kind of instructions, if any. But it was definitely referred to this committee to look at.
Yeah. I got the impression that we were supposed to figure out sort of the details of what happened.
I'm just trying to see if there was a motion that we've already been handed, but it sounds like we haven't been, or if there was.
Well, I think we probably have been, but I don't think we have the text of it because we don't have the minutes from that meeting.
If only people would write.
While we continue, I'm going to check and see if we've been sent minutes.
I shall read what I have from what the two of you have said. I have a motion that seems to say, we ask the PNB that the Ken Freeland suspension be rescinded and any significant action taken during that period be brought back before the LSB for reconsideration.
That is correct.
Okay. While I'm looking to see if we do have Houston minutes and see if I can find that, that'll be the motion that we'll take on before us. Sandra, how much time do we have?
We've still got 15 minutes at least.
Okay. Discussion on this point, preferably from someone who hasn't spoken yet? Okay. Hearing none, then anybody who has spoken?
I'd like to be on the stack.
Go ahead, Sandra.
I'd like to just clarify one more time that the reason that he was charged with being removed and then eventually suspended was because of violation of confidentiality and calling for the removal of our general station manager and program director or interim program director because he did not agree with their decisions. This was done in what was to have been a closed meeting of the Management Selection and Review Committee, but at the time that he made his statement and made his demand, it was still an open meeting. He knew what he was going to say before he said it and could have very easily asked the chair of the committee to go into closed session, but he did not. After he was told he was out of order and asked to leave, meeting, he then put it out on the internet all over the place. And again, this involves responsibility to his judiciary responsibilities to the foundation in that he laid KPFT and the Pacific Foundation wide open for a lawsuit by his actions and continues to do so to this day.
I'll just weigh in on it at this point. When I heard the discussion in Houston, it was clear that that was one of the formal complaints against him, but it was equally clear, and many of the people speaking to it on the PNB and from the audience who spoke in favor of the suspension were really talking about their objections to his conduct in the meeting using parliamentary procedure to delay the conduct of business and expressing frustration at that. And on several occasions, I was under the impression that that was really what was at the core of the move to suspend him.
May I speak, Dave?
Let me hear if there's anybody else. I think I heard somebody else asking to speak.
Our Paul wants to be in a stack, too.
Why don't you go next, Paul? And was there somebody else who was trying to speak?
Mary Berg, a point of information. Which minutes is it that we don't have? The minutes from the PNB that refer it to this committee?
Yeah, the Houston PNB minutes. So I just wrote Donna Warren asking her if she'd send that detail because I couldn't find the minutes in my inbox. Paul, and then Ted.
Okay.
Serene, please.
Okay. Why don't we put Serene ahead of you, Ted, since you've already spoken. Paul, Serene, and then Ted.
Yeah. Again, I contend that there isn't any provision that allows us suspend members at all, so I think that's illegal right there. I of course wasn't there. I don't know any of the people involved. I would say, however, that if a procedure to remove someone is within the bylaws and is legal, and it's apparently that was done, but it lost. So people then voted just to suspend because, hey, they got away with this in New York. I think this is an example of how Pacifica can really tear itself apart badly. At some point, somebody who has the money to spend on a lawyer is going to have something like this done to them, and they're going to slam the Pacifica Foundation. I also don't think it's good for Pacifica for us to be having majorities, take away part of the minority like this. I assume he's minority. And so I think that it's illegal to do it in the first place. And it just seems, I mean, again, we can't see what somebody may have done in something. But the attempt to remove sounds legal. The suspension, so-called, sounds illegal to me. So I would be in favor of the motion. And I think we should not do this sort of thing.
Serene?
Yeah,
this is Deb. I'd like to be on the set, please.
Okay, Deb. I'll put you on after Ted.
Deb, you're on after Ted. Who's after me?
Okay.
The motion that was brought before the board was initially to remove him from the board. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And that failed, and at the same meeting, another motion was brought to suspend him for the same reason.
Yes.
For the same action.
Yes.
Okay. Was he also removed? Well, I'm on a national committee with him, and I don't recall him missing any meetings, so I guess that it didn't affect his ability to participate nationally on our committee calls?
Not that I'm aware of.
Thank you.
Ted.
The statement that Sandra made regarding Ken making a motion in a public meeting for the termination, recommending the termination of Dwayne Bradley as the general manager is correct. He made that motion. The chair of that meeting, who filed the code of conduct violation against him, said after Ken made the motion, is there a second? In other words, giving standing to the motion. Then Mike Martin walked into the meeting and said, I am not going to countenance this, and threw Ken out of the meeting, and then said, this meeting is adjourned, I am throwing everybody out of the meeting. Subsequently, Al Delaney, the person who asked if there was a second, brought this code of conduct matter up, but never specifically identified the motion that Dwayne Bradley be removed as general manager as grounds for his termination. The fact that Sandra said that during this conversation today is the first time that this has been considered grounds for Ken's removal. Furthermore, the statement of Sandra that he was suspended because of a called-for boycott was never mentioned. A breach of confidentiality is false, and any stated reason for his suspension was never stated. I think that even though it says personnel matters must be discussed in executive session, or may be discussed in executive session, the fact that you were going into executive session to consider something is both the protection of the general manager and the protection of the foundation, that people have some idea as to the fact that some kind of a star chamber proceedings is about to begin. The idea that a board could go into executive session and recommend the removal of a general manager, and then perhaps the national board consider the same thing also in closed session, is a denial of the kind of democracy that we've all talked about. This is a much bigger issue than Ken Freeland, but specifically his suspension for making this motion that the person who filed the code of conduct violation against him, who asked for a second, is ridiculous. And this body ought to recommend to the national board that his suspension be rescinded. I'm done.
Deb?
Mary Berg, can I get on the stage?
Mary, after Deb.
Is Deb?
Deb's turn.
Okay. A couple of things. Nobody has said what exactly the grounds were because they were libelous. What he said was not that the manager should be removed, which is also not, shouldn't have been said in an open session. But what he said, the reason for it, he said, was libelous, and nobody wants to repeat it. And Ken has a habit of taking things that are his opinion and repeating them as facts. And if this is going to, what's got him in trouble. It was stated, he was given the reason. At the meeting where he was suspended, he produced the sheet with that he had been given that gave the reason for his suspension. It was a violation, a severe violation of confidentiality. And he, by doing so, he put the station and the network at severe risk. What he said was definitely libelous, and he knew it. He is just evading this. He is dancing around. He wants the control, and that's what it's about. It's not about whether or not procedures were followed. We had a parliamentarian there. We had a lawyer there. He had his lawyer there. Everything was followed. It was in order. If there hadn't been charges filed, his lawyer would have been on his feet to begin with. There is no substance to what they're saying. It was not just that he said that Dwayne should be replaced. And everybody who's there knows it.
I just want to say, if there are things that we would need to talk about at some point that shouldn't be done in public session, we could do executive session. But I also want to say, it's really hard for, I think, the members of this committee to deal with this in any way without any information. At the very least, the minutes that show what the motion was and what the cause was and the rest of that. So, I mean, my own feeling is we're not really prepared to deal with this at this time. But anyhow, Mary, go ahead.
Yeah, a couple of things. One, Arpal, are you saying that suspension is per se illegal? I noticed that you feel this way in the two situations. Is it only these two, or do you say this across the board?
I say,
and if so, where are you getting your information? Where you're getting your what is the basis for that? And maybe I'll say the second thing, and then Arpal, you can answer me when I'm finished. Yes, it is very difficult without the minutes, and I had tried to follow this, but there is so much. I personally have a hard time because there is so much going to the motives. This person only wanted to do this. This one wanted that. And I don't see how our committee can get into, that's not what we're called on to decide, I think. We're called on to decide, correct me if I'm wrong, whether or not a suspension is or is not illegal in general. If this one was, could it be rescinded, and could all the decisions then be rescinded? And we're just simply talking about procedural things here. That's all the governance committee can do, right? We can't be talking to the moral or the appropriateness of the conduct, right?
May I speak, Dave?
Are you done there?
Yeah, so Arpal, I'd like to know about the suspension thing as a general principle. Is it always illegal, in your opinion, or what?
Arpal, you want to answer, and then Ted?
Yes, I'll answer. I think there's no provision for it that's legal for us. As I said before, Roberts, allows you to do certain things, but the bylaws trump that. And sometimes it's hard to grasp some of these things, but when you say there are certain things that are allowed, you're kind of precluding the things you're not naming. In other words, you can say, well, you're allowed to do this. That doesn't mean you can do anything else. We're allowed to remove. And in fact, in a case I could name but won't, somebody's actually been de facto removed. And so basically, we are given the ability to remove by the bylaws, and I think that's what we can do. I don't think there's any provision for majority, a simple majority in a meeting suspending somebody. And I don't know that there's a provision for any suspension whatsoever.
Ted?
I would respectfully disagree with Arpal, and I know I'm just disagreeing with Ken Freeland on this matter in general. But specifically, Robert says that a member can be required. This is if there is a violation in a meeting, which does not apply here, but that's where the body, like the local station board, is a witness to it. And Robert says on page 628 under disciplinary procedures that the member be required to leave the hall during the remainder of the meeting or until the member is prepared to apologize, that his rights of membership be suspended for a time, or that he be expelled from the organization. Well, the incident in this particular case that Deb is alluding to, where she talks about libelousness, and let me address that for a moment. When Ken was suspended, it was done during executive session. The whole purpose of executive session is to allow for a full disclosure of ideas, and the fact that she is saying that what Ken said was libelous and it wasn't brought forth for discussion in this meeting is totally bogus, is the only word I can think of to describe it. We were in executive session so that if he did make libelous comments, those comments should have been brought forth for debate, and then perhaps his suspension should have occurred for this purpose. But Roberts further says that if there is an offense that occurs elsewhere than in the meeting, as in the board meeting, then you should form a committee of three people or thereabouts. I can't find it immediately upon looking at Roberts, but I know that it's in here, and we have done this. And it is where you form a committee, they go out, they investigate, and they come back to make a recommendation. In our case, that process was not followed. As a result, Ken's rights and the rights of the board were obfuscated. What I would like to see done today is that this body, the Governance Committee, recommend to the PNB that this whole matter be debated at the next PNB meeting, be it in executive session or in public session, whichever is their preference. But this matter cannot be swept under the rug, and this committee should vote to further this matter to the PNB.
Well, Ted, on that point, first of all, that's different than the motion that you put before us earlier, but secondly, the PMB already referred it to this committee to process it rather than wanting to deal with board meeting time. We heard a bunch of stuff at that meeting, and the problem there was that we weren't really in a position to deal with it because it was, you know, just a bunch of assertions by differing parties, and I don't see right now that this committee is in any superior position to address it one way or another. I will just tell you that I think if put to a vote at this moment, I would be surprised if many committee members would be able to vote in favor of it just for lack of information. So my personal feeling is that this committee needs to get more information than it has, and that that it would be a better idea in the interest of having us look at it reasonably to postpone this to the next meeting of this committee.
I'm fine with that. I was of the misunderstanding that some people, and I thought you, Dave, were suggesting that this committee was not the last course last resort. If this is the committee where this matter is resolved, or at least a recommendation is made from this committee to rescind or not to the national board, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with bringing forth more information, including the original motion that Ken made in the governance committee. I'm sorry, the Management Selection and Review Committee here in Houston, so that the body can hear what it is that he originally said that was never considered by the local station board, but that brought this whole matter forward in the first place.
Just to clarify, what I said is we cannot, as a committee, vote to rescind And we don't have the power as a committee to rescind that suspension. The PNB would. But all we can do is tell the PNB what motion the committee is recommending. We are the committee that was asked by the PNB to deal with this question. So, Sandra, how much time do we have on the item?
We've still got 5 minutes and 25 seconds, and I would like to offer a substitute motion.
Okay, I just want to say that basically at 5 minutes we're going to start disposing of this stuff because that's about how long it takes. So enter the substitute, and then after we have those before us, if anyone wants to move to postpone, that's in order before we deal with these things. Go ahead.
Well, in lieu of the fact that many of the people on this committee do not have all the facts, I would suggest that my motion would be to postpone it till the next meeting for further review.
Okay. I just want to let people know, yesterday I looked into, at our LSB meeting, this question of tabling and postponement, and found that the motion to table is really just a motion to stop something from being dealt with at the moment because of some other urgent matter that the body needs to deal with, and that's what's not debatable. A motion to postpone is debatable, so if people want to discuss that, we can spend 1 or 2 minutes before we vote.
Who just made the motion to postpone?
Rawline.
Okay, thank you.
Point of order, that is not a substitute motion. It is a motion, but it's not a substitute
right.
motion.
I recognize that. It's a motion to postpone. Yeah. Is there...
I second that.
It's not necessary in committee for a second.
All right, so it is not. Sorry.
If nobody needs to discuss this, can we just go to a vote? Is there any objection to postponing until the next meeting?
Point of personal privilege.
Go ahead.
I need to take a 2-minute break. I think I'm a key player in the next issue. Can I introduce my vote and step aside until I can get back to the phone?
On the motion to postpone, go ahead.
I'm in favor of the motion to postpone.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Is there any objection to the motion to postpone?
Wait a minute.
Okay. Hearing none, we'll postpone it.
Point of
information, go ahead.
Chair?
Yep.
I'm not sure I understand. A member has just taken a point of personal privilege to come back on this?
No, he asked to be recorded, his vote to be recorded first. We were at the point of calling for the vote on the motion to postpone, so I let him register his vote before he stepped off. So the rest of the vote, I'm asking if there are any other objections. If not, then we'll postpone.
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I've been trying for 10 minutes. It keeps saying I'm not muted, but I couldn't. Obviously, you couldn't hear me because I had a question. May I ask it?
We're in the midst of a vote to postpone. Is it a point of information?
I think
no.
I've been trying, and I just get calling.
Go ahead, please.
I simply want to know, the code of conduct that was referred to, is that a code of conduct developed in Houston, or has the PNB developed another code of conduct that I didn't know about, or I just want to know?
I don't think this bears on the postponement, so I'm going to ask that we address that after this. Is there any objection to postponing? Okay, hearing no more postponed, I just want to say that it would be helpful if the various parties in this could provide the committee with information, documentary information, far enough in advance that the committee can know about it. If they'll send it to, Paul, you put Ted on the Yahoo distribution list, and those members should send it to the full committee on the Yahoo group list.
Yeah.
In answer to Lydia's question, Sandra, can you, or Deb, can you answer that?
But could she repeat the question one more time?
The code of conduct that was referred to, is that something, a code of conduct, a formal code of conduct that has been developed in Houston and, you know, that all members are aware of, for example, is that a PNB developed code of conduct?
As far as I know.
And if so, if we can have a copy, that would be my
question. I'll answer that. We've been sent a copy by Mike Martin. They have a code of conduct that I think they're operating under.
That's the one that's developed and I believe applies here in Houston.
Right. We've been sent it before, but could you send it again to the committee, Sandra?
Yes.
I have a point of information, Mary Berg. When you,
go ahead.
When you say about the information, does this mean we're going to get these minutes?
I think the minutes are the minimal thing we need.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine that Ken will have some stuff and other people may have some mm-hmm. stuff that they want to send to us. I'm just asking that the Houston delegation see to it that the committee is given whatever documents it needs.
So they'll get the minutes created somehow.
I'll leave it to them.
That would be my intent to
okay.
make sure that this committee has
okay.
everything that's occurred in Houston regarding the Ken Freeland matter.
Well,
as
and the
soon
PNB
as possible.
Minutes, too.
Okay. Dave,
yeah, I've already emailed the PNB secretary asking for the PNB minutes.
Okay.
Dave, may I make one more comment?
Yep.
Okay, is that way back when we started working on the Code of Conduct, this was one of the issues that we referred to the Code of Conduct,
mm-hmm.
the working group,
right.
when it came up at WPAM. I think it's worth pursuing. I would prefer suspension rather than completely being kicked off the board, but I do think that there needs to be some careful criteria developed, because I think otherwise we're going to continue in this conflict, because there is a void in our bylaws to refer to it, and therefore we defer to to Robert's rules, that this is an ongoing conflict. So if the working group on Code of Conduct could please take this up, it would be appreciated.
Yep. Okay. So we're going to move the agenda now. Next item is the status of Susan Young on the LSB, and the issue is that it's been raised that her service on I guess it's the Miller Advisory Board constitutes service on as an appointed government official, and therefore rendering her ineligible. Karen, again, we ask the Houston folks to enlighten us. Why don't we start this time with Sandra, Deb, and then Ted, who stepped off for a couple minutes.
Yeah, this is Sandra. I'd like to weigh in on that. Before Susan Young ever ran for the local station board, that issue was brought before the local station elections election supervisor, who then forwarded it to the national supervisor, who at that time determined that no, absolutely not, there was no issue or violation, that she was fully capable and free to run for a member of the LSB. Her position with the Miller Outdoor Theater has been beneficial to the station and the foundation, and in no way, in my understanding, violates any of her ability to perform as our chair or as a member of the LSB. I feel that this has been brought forth to this committee because, again, of people politicking, so to speak, and because they do not favor Susan as our chair or as a member of the LSB, because she has disagreed with them on numerous occasions. And, again, it's just one more way of throwing another wrench into the works to keep people from getting things done. It is an important matter. I believe that it was initially put in the bylaws to prevent people, say, who hold political office from gaining control over our foundation. But in this way, it does not apply. She has been a credit to our board. She has not been detrimental. And I just really think that we have much more important things to be discussing as to readdressing this issue in specific to Susan. Now, if they want to address it in specific to, say, a member of the Republican Party and his affiliation with being on, say, the LSB, then yes, that needs to be addressed, and I think that it has been somewhat in the bylaws, but again, I think that this is in specific to Susan being brought up as a detriment to everybody that's working on the board and on the various committees. I would really like for us to dismiss this at this time and move forward with whatever issues that we still have remaining that are of vital importance.
Before I recognize Deb, I want to read for the benefit of the committee the section of the bylaws that's at issue. It's from Article 4, Delegates, Section 2A on eligibility, and it said that any listener member in Okay, here we go. No person who holds any elected or appointed public office at any level of government, federal, state, or local, or is a candidate for such office, shall be eligible for election to the position of delegate. A delegate shall be deemed to have resigned the position of delegate if she or he becomes a candidate for public office or accepts a political appointment during his or her term as a delegate. This restriction shall not apply to civil service employment by governmental agencies. So that's the section. Deb?
Yes. Thank you. I'm finally back on a reliable phone. A couple of things. I sent you all a written thing about this. The most important thing is that Susan acted in good faith. She was told by the people that we appointed to make those decisions that it would be all right. And I think we have to go with that. We are not talking about, Rick Perry, governor of Texas, trying to control the board. She's on an entertainment division. And if we go ahead and say that she cannot be a member of both, she will resign the other one. She will not. So anybody who is hoping to be chair in her place can just give it up. She's going to stay as chair, and if she has to resign the other, it'll be a great loss. But that's the way it'll happen. Second of all, that was enacted, particularly according to the people who were there, on the inner circle. I was sort of in the outer circle on the bylaws, and while I agree that we do not want people controlling the state and controlling the airwaves, such as they do in most commercial, we don't want that to happen at Pacifica. A position on the Miller Theater board is hardly such a position, and this is why it was why the decision was made by the election supervisor. Now, I personally don't think the election supervisors should be making those decisions. I was kind of annoyed about it, and when it became obvious, I felt they had no right to. But we did hire them to, and that's the decision they made, and we should stand by it. Like I say, nothing's going to change at Pacifica, because if you make her, if you stand by this and say she can't be, she'll resign Miller Theater.
Okay, I do want to
put me on the board. On the call, you're on deck.
No, I can't appoint you. go ahead, and then I'll speak.
Oh, okay. Well, this is, again, one of those things that I think needs to be clarified in the bylaws.
Right, point of order.
You're right. I'm sorry. I had asked for Ted first. Ted, what was your point of order?
That you said that the three members from Houston would speak, and said I would go third. And
Lydia, do you mind? I'd like to ask Ted to go ahead.
Oh, not at all. I thought he was on his two-minute break still. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ted, and then Lydia.
Okay. I have a prepared statement that I must read to you. Dear members of the Governance Committee, what we are in now, whether we want to call it or not, is a trial. And it is not just a trial of Susan Young. What is a trial is our own integrity. The Pacifica bylaws, like them or not, are absolutely clear on the question of dual participation on this board and on an appointed board at any level of government, in this case, city government. Susan Young serves on the Miller Theater Advisory Board. The name of this body is a misnomer. It is not an advisory board. It has the power to allocate $1.5 million annually. 24 people participate in that process. Susan Young, nominated by the mayor of Houston and confirmed by city council, is one of those people. 2 years ago, Susan raised the question with the KPFT local election supervisor, Dennis Fetters. I don't know why she did that, since this section of the bylaws is clear, but she did. Dennis raised the issue with Terry Barishas, the national election supervisor. Terry issued the following on November 24th, 2003, and he recently wrote, please circulate this old email below that encapsulates my interpretation of the bylaws covering public officials. Note that I advised local election supervisors in several cases to disqualify potential candidates based on this interpretation. And here's what he wrote. The key question is what makes an appointed office a public office as opposed to an honorary or advisory or unofficial office? The fact that a public official or body makes the appointment is not controlling. As extreme examples, if a city council passes a resolution creating an uncompensated position titled town poet, annual pie-eating contest judge, and then appoints a person to that position, I do not believe that person fills a public office as the term is intended by the bylaws. This could be a slippery slope, and he writes in parentheses, when is an office serious enough to be covered, close parentheses. I tried to draw a sharp line in the definition below. Interpretation of Article 4, Section 2, disqualification for elected and appointed public office candidates and office holders. This is how this bylaws provision will be interpreted for the purposes of inclusion or disqualification of candidates on the ballot. But please be aware that my interpretation is not binding on future legal challenges that could occur. The term elected public office is reasonably clear. I will focus on the meaning of the term appointed public office at the local, state, and federal level. I believe this term applies to offices that are created by municipal charters or state or federal statutes that exercise some decision-making authority with direct impact on the public or administer public funds. I do not believe this term applies to advisory bodies or positions or bodies created by resolution of executive action. I misread that. By resolution or executive action that do not have the authority of law. For example, a tax abatement commission authorized by a municipal charter that has had authority to grant tax abatement would be an appointed public office, while a sister city commission created by municipal resolution that advised the city council on policy options would not be an appointed public office. Signed, Terry Baricius, Pacifica National Election Supervisor, with his email address, phone number, fax, and address in Burlington, Vermont. Now I read what I have written. Richard Phelps, the chair of the KPFT LSB and a member like me.
Pardon?
Phelps, the chair of the KPFA LSB and a member like me of the Pacifica Election Committee, who did not think that this matter should be addressed in the Election Committee, thought it ought to be resolved either locally or addressed by the PNB Governance Committee. Let's compare this to the Miller Theater Board from its website. The Miller Theater Advisory Board is appointed by Mayor Bill White and confirmed by Houston City Council. Through Section 32 of the City of Houston's Code of Ordinances, the Advisory Board has the following duties. It administers grants to organizations performing at Miller Outdoor Theater. It solicits donations to support the theater and manages donations received. And it manages the contract for Miller Theater's concession operations. Proceeds from concession sales support Miller Theater's free season. Additionally, it says the Miller Theater Advisory Board manages an allocation of hotel occupancy tax to support performances. Oh. Then Richard says, so Terry's opinion fits the Miller Theater Board to a T. How did Susan get the okay? A wink and a nod from the local election supervisor. So much for you, she got approved. Now I write, Terry's intent was clear. Dennis, for whatever reason, that's Dennis Fetters, the local election supervisor, for whatever reason missed that intent, and I claim now, and for the first time in a forum established to right that wrong, that Dennis Fetters' ruling was in error. Dennis never shared the language of the ruling of Terry Bereshus, the local advisory board election committee, and it was a local advisory board at that time, and the election committee never brought an official report addressing this issue before the local advisory board. There is plenty of blame here if we want to play the blame game. I was a member of the LAB, so let me begin by admitting my own error. I should have raised this issue at that time, and the LAB should have addressed it. It was also the failure of the rest of the LAB, including its chair, Deb Shafto, and its only paid member, ex officio member, Dwayne Bradley. It was also the fault of the election committee, and that would include, I think, Sandra Rawline, and its chair, Robin Lewis, and it was the fault of Susan Young. So now the ball is in our court, that is, this National Governance Committee. All those decisions are water over the bridge. Now it is the Governance Committee who can put an end to this continuing breach. We can, according to Robert's Rules of Order, address a continuing breach and rule that Susan must step down from either the local station board or the Miller Theater Advisory Board. Susan wants this body.
Ted, can I ask you how much longer this goes on? This is taking up all the time we have for this item. The points have been made. Does it go on much longer?
No, just Susan Young wants this body to rule on this issue. She has made that request. And I think it is our integrity and the integrity of the entire foundation and the bylaws that are at stake here.
Lydia, go ahead.
Okay, so I think the bylaws are clear. I mean, in terms of, I think that the election supervisor ruled in error in relation to the bylaws. That doesn't mean that I agree with the way the bylaws are written because I think they're incomplete. However, at this juncture, to overturn that decision, because the bylaws we have also given so much leeway to the election supervisor, that it would be very problematic. Not because it does not only apply to Susan, it also applies locally at KPFK in the first election. That election supervisor locally in LA did not allow someone serving on the neighborhood council to become a candidate, whereas the second election supervisor did allow one of our sitting board members who belongs to a neighborhood council to sit. And so we would have to revisit, perhaps throughout the network, reversals on decisions made by the election supervisors. What I think that we need to do is to fix this if we have an issue with it. However, neighborhood councils, like this advisory board that you're talking about, have budgets. And I think it is going to be problematic to reverse that in the bylaws. Having said that, we also need to be consistent because from election to election, it has varied in terms of what the election supervisor has. I personally had candidates in our neighborhood council that I said no to for the second election because of the decision of the first election supervisor. And then it turns out that they were permitted to run here in L.A. It would be very problematic system-wide. I don't think that it would be wise to reverse it at this juncture. I think we have to look to the bylaws, and we have to correct both that and the purview of election supervisors to have so much authority without, especially when it's in violation of the bylaws. So to be clear, it's in violation of the bylaws. I don't think we should go back.
Mary Beth.
We'll discuss, Sandra, how much time do we have on the item?
We have 12 minutes.
Okay, at 5 minutes, I'm going to ask for that we dispose of it. Who else would like to speak?
Mary Berg, I wanted to be on the stack.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I really think that Lydia is quite right. As I hear his, Terry's, when I hear this, and I had read it before, I don't come to the same interpretation that Ted did. It seemed clear to me. And in this, and since this was the ruling, what the remedy is not to go back on that. That would just be a huge can of worms. The remedy is to, exactly, when we write our manual, to specify the, and limit, and or delimit and define the powers of the election supervisor and make sure that if there's a conflict with the bylaws, they can't, you know, that's where I think the fix is going to be, not in over in re-ruling on this case. It's, I think we should really move forward on that and not do that at all. I agree with Lydia.
I'd like to weigh in on it. I think that if it's in violation of the bylaws, whether or not there's been unequal application of the rules around the network, to me, is not a reason to not act on it if we think it is a violation of the bylaws. Yeah, we have to tighten it up, but presumably each of these various instances could be brought forward to us. And for us to say, well, the election supervisor ruled on this, therefore, as a continuing violation of the bylaws, we have no role, is not something I'd go along with. I'm not sure where I stand on this, but I do think that it would be appropriate for us to rule on this question or any other question that anybody would ever bring about whether the decisions of election supervisors were correct. And as Ted also pointed out, there was a problem in the interpretation based on one set of standards that were provided by Borisius and then the way they were interpreted by the local elections person. So I differ with Lydia on that point. Again, I'm not feeling entirely ready to act on this myself, again, because we don't have Susan's side of the issue. But further discussion.
Yeah, I'd like to get on the stack, please, Serene.
Arpal and then Serene, anybody else?
Sandra would like to be on the stack.
Okay, Sandra, I'll recognize other people who haven't spoken yet if they want to pipe up before you. Is that all right?
That's fine.
Okay, Arpal and then Serene.
Yeah, first, what is the Miller Outdoor Theater? What's the theater group?
It's the Hollywood Bowl in Los Angeles. Admission is free. It operates with a large amount of hotel and motel taxes that are dedicated to it, as well as funding from the National Endowment for the Arts. Susan Young serves on it as a result of the fact that
Ted, the question was not why does Susan serve. He asked what was the Miller Theater.
Okay.
Did that answer your question, Paul?
There's a lot of yelling, but it's a theater thing. And apparently, and the other part of the question is, okay, I think got answered. There are taxes collected by the government which fund it, and the board basically runs this thing and allocates, is given the tax money to do stuff with.
It decides whether or not the money goes to the Houston Symphony, the Houston Ballet, or a number of other smaller companies each year, and who does not get funding, even though they request to be able to put on performances there with these funds.
All right.
So, Sandra, do you have anything to add to that? Is that accurate?
Well, just that it has also worked in conjunction with KTFT to help raise money for the foundation, and that they have the Juneteenth celebration there, and members of our local station board and members of our community participate actively with the Miller Station, or with the Miller Outdoor Theater, both to promote the station and use it as an outreach opportunity for the African American community.
Does that answer your question, Paul? Are you done?
No, I'm not quite done. All right, thanks for the information. I don't know that I'm quite ready to vote on this yet because I'm not sure I know enough about it, but I would lean towards saying this sure looks like there's a case to be made for this being a violation of Section 4. I'm not saying it is, but I'm saying certainly a case is made for it. I need to know more. And as for election supervisor stuff, you know, it an election supervisor can make a mistake, and so we're not being asked to do anything about the elections. We're doing, we're being asked to do something about the facts on the ground right now at this time. So surely we can recommend to the PNB something or other, and if we were to decide, not saying we will, that this is a violation and a person can't be a member of the LSB, we could make that recommendation and the PNB could, I think, act on it. But right now, I would need to know some more, although I have to say I think a case is being made here.
We've only heard one side.
Serene.
A couple of questions. Is it $150,000 that the advisory board sort of makes recommendations about?
It sounds to me like it's not making recommendations. It sounds like they actually administer the funds.
I don't know.
Yeah, they do not make recommendations. The city council gives them carte blanche to allocate these funds.
And is it? She asked, is it $150,000?
Was it $150,000? I think
it's $1.5 million.
Okay. The Susan was forthcoming about her role in the theater, correct, on that board? And was the election supervisor's memo circulated? Oh, when did it come to light?
It came to light when Ted brought it up.
Oh.
I did not know anything about it until a couple months
ago. Is this
Melinda? No, it's Deb.
Deb, sorry, Deb. Okay, so when did you get it?
Also a couple of months ago, but I was not aware of the fact that neither the elections committee at the time that the election that Susan Young was elected to the board never got a report from Dennis Fetters, from Terry Barishas, and the local station board never got a report from the elections committee on this specific issue.
Okay.
Unless I am mistaken, Deb was the chair of the local advisory board at that time.
Okay. Susan was elected in the first election.
Hang on, sorry, Serene, go ahead.
Susan was elected in the first In the first election.
That's
yes.
Correct.
Okay, so she served 2 years.
Yes.
Yes.
Are you done, Serene?
Yep. Thanks.
Okay, we're at 5 minutes, so we need to start disposing of this motion. Does anybody want to make a motion to postpone, or do we consider the motion now?
I would make a motion to postpone because, for one thing, we haven't heard Susan Young's position, as you pointed out. So I'd make
Until when would you like to postpone?
In the next meeting, or until we get information and are able to hear from Susan or to see what her position was.
Okay. Would you like to amend that to ask that she be invited to that section of the meeting to present her version of events?
Yeah.
Okay. Paul, do you have the motion?
I'm getting it here. One second. All right.
I have a point of information. We're going to readdress this issue. When we address the issue of Ken Freeland at our next meeting, will he also be allowed to give his point of view?
On that, we're asking for – I don't think we're quite ready for that because then we're dealing with a lot of different folk coming in. But why don't we ask that question after we figure out what we're going to do on this thread, and then I'll entertain that question, okay?
Thank you.
Mary Bird,
I have is...
Lydia, can you add me to the stack?
We don't really have a stack. We're dealing with a motion. If you want to make amendment, yeah. Go ahead, Paul.
I have. To postpone this question to the next meeting, or when we are able to hear from Susan Young and invite her to the next meeting. Do you want to say to postpone this to the next meeting?
To postpone to the next meeting and to invite Susan Young to present her argument.
Mary Berg, point of information.
Hang on. Lydia, did you... go ahead with the point of information. Sorry.
Go
ahead.
I just wanted... clarification as to why we're inviting Susan on. I don't know, to get a sense whether any of us I don't doubt her having been forthcoming and asked for an opinion from the election supervisor and all of that. I don't think that that's at issue.
Okay.
It's a different thing than Ken Freeland. We're just dealing with our own constitutional issue in terms of the bylaws, the election supervisor. We have all the material before us. I think we just need to give it some thought and process it. I don't know that,
To deal with that, why don't we separate that question and we'll deal with that after. So let's just postpone to the next meeting.
Yes, that's
is there any objection to that?
Yeah.